Those subjects he was more than well-versed. Coffee in hand, Rhys exited the cruiser and began the walk to meet his friend. It had been too long. The intermittent muffled sound from the sub-base below would occasionally break over the hill to interrupt a distant lawnmower and the cadence of sprinklers on a section of grass across the street. The peaceful chirping of birds in a light morning breeze was the perfect complement to the serenity of Fort Rosecrans National Cemetery. Rhys ascended the steps into a small, white, nondescript building and entered his friend's name in the computer to locate his final resting place, section, and gravesite number. He had made this trek with Senior Chief Martin Hackathorn on many an occasion, attending too many funerals together over the years. War does that. They always stopped at the small Victorian House coffee shop at the base of the hill before paying their respects to those taken too soon. One becomes familiar with the layout of national cemeteries in times of war, and Rhys was no different. He knew exactly where to go. It was a good spot. Though he knew precisely where he was going, Rhys took his time getting there. He was dressed respectfully in slacks, his customary Salomon shoes, and a tucked-in button-up shirt. Black wraparound gaiters sunglasses shielded his eyes from the early morning glare. A light jacket hid the Glock 19 concealed in his waistband, which he was sure was a violation of policy or law, probably both, and possibly even etiquette. But Martin would not want Rhys to visit his graveside unarmed. Of that, Rhys was certain. White headstones stood out in sharp contrast with the green grass of the rolling hills. One thing the country did well was keep up national cemeteries. Rhys passed row after row in solemn respect. Lives ending in dates 1914, 1877, 1966, 1944, 1917, 1898, 2006, 1900, and 2016 had found peace here. Those dates corresponded with events in a country that had seen little rest from war. The Indian War campaign, the Mexican campaign, World War I, Vietnam, World War II, the Haitian campaign, Korea, the Spanish-American War, Iraq, and Afghanistan. Every generation seemed to be represented, and every generation had answered the call. This generation was the repository of that accumulated knowledge of war. Rhys did not intend to let it go to waste. Rhys wondered where he would go when it was his time. With what he was about to do, he wasn't sure. He hoped they would honor the request in his will to be buried alongside Lauren and Lucy. He wanted to be next to them for eternity. Rhys didn't realize he had stopped walking, nor did he remember how long he had been standing there, coffee still cooling in his hand, eyes welling up, looking at the grave of his friend, the big man with the beard whose head Rhys had last held when it wasn't even attached to his body. Rhys took a knee in front of the headstone, lowered his head, and didn't speak. His thoughts were focused beyond the grave.
"Sorry, buddy,"
Rhys thought.
"We never should have gone on that mission. I knew it, and we went anyway. But the truth of it is, we were set up before we even deployed. I'm the only one left. They took Lucy, Lauren, and our unborn son, and I don't have long. The bastards that killed you killed us all back in this country during our workup. Don't worry, though. I still have a bit more time. I know who they are now, and I'm hunting them. They don't know it yet, but they will soon. I'm coming for them, and I'm going to put them all in the ground."
Standing, Rhys took another look at the grave, emblazing the words etched there into his memory, before turning to make his way back through the warriors of battles past. Written on the headstone, under Martin F. Hackathorn, April 4, 1975, June 14, 2017, U.S. Navy, Afghanistan, was one simple word: patriot. Rhys was coming. Death was coming for them all. Part 3. The Reckoning. Chapter 46. Tijuana, Mexico. Marco had gotten Reese across the border without much trouble. The Range Rover that carried them south through Imperial Beach and Otay Mesa and into the San Ysidro border crossing checkpoint was a version called the Sentinel, built by Land Rover's Special Vehicle Operations Unit in Great Britain. It could withstand armor-piercing incendiary bullets and shrapnel from hand grenades. With a 510-horsepower engine and a retooled suspension, it was a serious piece of machinery. Reese shuddered to think what it had cost. Up-armored Suburbans led and trailed the Range Rover, looking a bit like a presidential motorcade with a British twist. It seemed a bit high profile to Reese, but this was Marco's department, and he seemed more than confident that he could get his friend back and forth across the border. Reese couldn't help but tense up when they passed through the checkpoint into Mexico, but they drove through without so much as a pause. At midnight, there was not the usual backup of cross-border daily labor causing hours of delay at peak travel times that happened to coincide with San Diego's steadily growing number of commuters also going to and from work. Marco smiled, watching Reese visibly relax as they sped south. Reese wondered how many Mexican and American laws he had just broken, knowing the contents of his loadout bag behind the seats. Darkness enveloped the motorcade as it made its way into the heart of Tijuana. Things had gotten so bad there in recent years that the Navy had issued a directive forbidding sailors from partaking in liberty south of the border. The bars that used to bustle with U.S. military personnel from the second largest naval port in the country were now just hosts to college students from San Diego and Los Angeles, too young to get into the bars and nightclubs of Southern California. Taking a sharp left down what appeared to be a dead-end alley, the vehicles abruptly turned into what looked to Reese like a garage chop shop. They pulled into spots, obviously reserved for the boss, as corrugated sliding doors came down behind them.
"We're here," Marco said, smiling.
"We're where?" Reese inquired, leaning forward to get a better look at his surroundings.
"My Tijuana offices."
Marco laughed as he saw a puzzled look cross Reese's face.
"You expected better, see?"
"Well, it's a bit different from your usual digs."
"Ah, yes. It reminds me of my humble beginnings. Plus, I can concentrate here without the unwelcome distractions brought on by success."
"Come," Marco continued, tilting his head in the direction of his door.
"We have much to discuss."
Reese grabbed his loadout bag from the back of the Range Rover as Marco's security detail spread out into what looked to be their customary posts to keep an eye on surveillance camera footage of the surrounding area. A group of six nondescript cars were parked neatly in one corner of the garage. They looked like they would fit in nicely with Tijuana traffic and not arouse any suspicion if Marco needed to move around the city with anonymity. A small gym was set up in one corner of the garage, along with an impressive array of wrestling mats. "Is this how you've been beating me all these years? Sneaking into Mexico to train while I'm overseas?"
"Ha! One must do what one can. I know you read your Sun Tzu. Luckily, tonight's foe has not,"
Marco called out as he bounded up a set of stairs to what Reese assumed would be his office overlooking the garage. Reese followed as hastily as he could, encumbered by the weight of his large bag. Marco's office was neat and orderly, even minimalist. A row of security monitors lined one wall on the far side, allowing Marco to overlook the garage floor through large windows positioned to face the enormous doors.
"What business do you run from here?" Reese asked.
Marco looked his companion in the eye.
"I have many businesses, my friend. I can run most of them from anywhere, but certain meetings and ventures require a place such as this."
He paused.
"Did you ever wonder how I got my American citizenship so quickly?"
"I assumed it was because your U.S. business interests would generate good tax dollars."
"Ah, yes, this is true. But I have other dealings that are of interest to certain agencies of your government.
It's your government now, too, Rhys reminded Marco with a nod.
Very true, amigo, very true. I know it is hard to understand, but what we will do tonight will help both my business interests and our countries. I will explain more later. For now, you just have to trust me.
I trust you, Marco. Otherwise, I wouldn't be here.
I know. Let's review those pictures again.
They had gone over the target package made up of the intelligence that Ben Edwards had delivered before crossing the border, but both men wanted to review it one last time. Rhys knew Marco was the one person who could get him to his target. Marco had said yes without even knowing exactly what Rhys had in mind. After hearing Rhys out, Marco offered his security detail as an assault force, but Rhys decided against it. They could get him to and from his target and set up as a blocking element, but that was all. This was his war.
Okay, Marco said when they had gone over it again. When do we leave?
You said it was about 20 minutes to the target house, Rhys said, looking at his watch. Let's leave in 30 minutes, giving us a time on target of 0300.
Bien, 30 minutos. I will ready the men and cars. They will be, how do you say it, our mobility package?
Marco said, clearly pleased with his use of military lingo.
Thanks, Marco. I won't forget this.
Marco nodded and left Rhys alone to ready his gear. The new Tijuana motorcade was a bit different than the one that had brought them into Mexico. Gone were the plush Range Rover and armored escort vehicles, replaced by unarmored, unremarkable, everyday cars covered in dust and dents. Perfect for the night's mission. Rhys just hoped they would start, but was soon pleasantly surprised when he heard the engines crank up. It was apparent that the engines under the hoods were anything but ordinary. Marco smiled again, visibly enjoying surprising his friend.
Sun Tzu, he said again with a mischievous twinkle in his eye. Deception.
Rhys's current mobility package consisted of two cars that would be derelict vehicles almost anywhere in the United States, but were an ideal fit for the streets of Tijuana. Marco and Rhys were in the back of the lead vehicle. A driver and one of Marco's bodyguards sat in the front.
10 minutos, Señor Toro,
said the big man in the front passenger seat. Marco nodded. He started to say something when his phone chirped.
Perdón,
he said, answering.
Sí?
Followed by a long pause.
Sí. Gracias.
Hanging up, Marco turned to Rhys.
My source inside has left the building. 14 men, 6 women, no children. The women are hookers from Mexicali. They have to import them for security reasons. They have one scout on the roof with an AK and one in the front room with a shotgun.
Rhys nodded. His face was eerily calm. Marco had never seen his friend in work mode before, and even though he was not one to scare easily, inside he suddenly felt chilled. Rhys was all business. Tonight that business was death.
Aquí,
said the man in the front passenger seat about 10 minutes later, the car slowing to a crawl.
Okay,
Marco said.
This is it.
He pointed to a dilapidated building at the end of the block.
Rhys, when you kill these men, will your journey be over?
Rhys paused.
I'm just getting started. Thanks, buddy. I'll be back in a few.
Chapter 47. Rhys moved quickly and quietly from the sidewalk into the abandoned building Marco had identified on Google Earth, across and adjacent from the target building. It was a construction project that looked like it had not been worked on in years. Rhys felt good. He was dressed in his field camis with full battle kit. It had taken more than 15 years of warfare to dial his gear in to where it was today. And with tonight's op, Rhys would add yet another country to the list of places where he had applied his trade. The only difference between the gear from his last deployment to Afghanistan and tonight was that the helmet he wore was his non-ballistic issued bump helmet, his Kevlar one having been lost to the ambush in the graveyard of empires. He was also not burdened with two radios he usually carried.
That gave him added mobility on this mission. His NODs gave him a distinct edge over his enemy, and tonight, Reese planned on using them to his full advantage. Though he was fairly certain the building was deserted, he cleared it methodically and smoothly. Slow is smooth, smooth is fast. As he moved to the roof, he was transported back to another place in time, patrolling through the streets of Ramadi with his sniper team, setting up in the dark of night to await their unsuspecting prey from an advantageous position. Tonight was similar, except that he was alone, and these were the men who had killed his family. Reese scanned the roof and moved to where he had a clear vantage point of the target house. It looked quiet. At first he thought Marco's informant had given them bad intel since he didn't see the sentry on the roof. Another more careful examination revealed the man sleeping in a chair, head back, an AK clearly visible propped against the railing next to him. Reese never would have used the roof during the day, but at night, with the technical advantage of his NODs, it offered a logical location from which to engage his first target. Reese knelt down and rested his rifle on the railing. He settled the IR laser from the Atpial, invisible to anyone without a night vision device, attached to the top rail of his M4 on the bridge of the sentry's nose. Pressing the trigger, Reese sent a 77-grain Black Hills 5.56 bullet directly into the man's face. Reese settled the laser onto the man's chest and put two more into his center mass, just for good measure, his suppressor muffling the sound of the shots. Then he stood and made his way back to the street. He passed Marco's vehicles as if in a blur, his movements smooth and steady, weapon up and trained at the front door of the target building. Locked. Shit. The informant was supposed to leave it open. If he had been with his assault team, Reese would have breached the door and begun clearing the house, as he had so many times throughout the war, but he was not with his assault team. Tonight, he was the team. Reese immediately switched to his secondary method of entry and moved to the side of the structure. So similar to Ramadi. Finding the outside pipe he had identified through Ben's imagery, he quickly slung his rifle and began to carefully work his way up the side of the building. Not as easy as when I was an E4, Reese thought. Cresting the top of the building, Reese drew his pistol to cover the rooftop. Seeing only the dead sentry, he swung himself over the railing, holstering his pistol and bringing his M4 back around and into his shoulder in one fluid motion, before moving to the stairs leading down into the lion's den. Without knowing the exact layout of the interior, Reese was going to have to clear the entire building. Using angles, much like a police officer with a flashlight and a handgun, Reese could instead use his NODs and M4 IR light laser combo to clear each room. If he lost the element of surprise or the advantage afforded him by his night vision, things could go south in a hurry. The building smelled of burnt cannabis, urine, and sweat. A disgusting combination. Working his way into the first hallway of the third floor, Reese identified a partially open door to his left and closed doors to the other three rooms in the hallway. Pulling his M4 back at an angle into the crook of his elbow and body, Reese slowly pushed the door open. A lone figure could be seen lying face down on the bed, wearing shorts and a tank top, sheets covering one leg. It looked like he was dead already. Continuing his scan of the room, Reese took everything in, his mind working to identify targets. Clear. Well, almost clear. Reese leveled his laser at the back of the sleeping man's head and depressed the trigger, sending one round into his brain, which exploded onto the pillow and bed frame. One down. Reese held his breath. From the looks of it, these guys had been up partying most of the night, but it was never wise to underestimate your opponent. Back into the hallway and onto the next room. Nothing to suggest Reese's suppressed shot had been heard. This door was unlocked, and Reese opened it as quietly as possible. Two people were visible sleeping in bed. A grotesquely obese gang member lay naked, facing up, one leg draped over the side and resting on the floor. A petite young woman lay naked next to him on her back. Reese hoped that she partied hard enough to keep her from waking up. He didn't want to kill her. But if her waking up would compromise his mission, he had no qualms about putting her down. Reese shifted his M4 to his left hand, gently releasing a small bungee cord that held a centuries-old tool that he and his men had learned still reigned supreme as one of the quietest ways to end a man's life. Rhys raised the Winkler Sayok tomahawk, taking careful aim at the side of the sleeping man's head in the center of the temple, and drove it powerfully downward through his brain, killing him instantly. Quickly, Rhys shifted to the woman and prepared to deliver her kill strike. She stretched and stirred, settling back into a comfortable sleeping position, unaware that the angel of death had passed her over this night. Smoothly securing his hawk back into the sheath,